orchards and devastated your client's crops.
All right, but so what? Kiva said. If it did happen, and I'm not going to stipulate it did until we have our own people take a look, then we'll compensate the clients and plow under the orchards. It doesn't have anything to do with this shipment of haverfruit.
It's not that simple, Vanosh said. The virus is cross-compatible with some of N's local crops, including Banu, a staple down there. We've had to quarantine entire provinces to halt its spread. Food prices are through the roof. People are concerned about the possibility of famine. The Duke of End was already battling an insurgency. This has made it worse. Vanosh leaned forward on the table toward Lagos. To put it bluntly, Lady Kiva, the House of Lagos has helped to destabilize this entire planet.
Kiva stared at this official fuckwit in disbelief. You can't think we intended...
Now it was Vanosh's turn to cut off Lagos. Lady Kiva, it doesn't matter what your house intended. What matters is what it did. What it did in this case is pour oil onto a fire. Until this is resolved in a court of law, I'm afraid your trade rights for End are suspended.
I don't know about any of this, Kiva said.
Everything about the virus is in the report.
Not about the fucking virus, about the destabilization and the famine or any of the rest of that crap. You can't pin it on us.
It's not all pinned onto your family, Lady Kiva, I assure you. But enough can be pinned to your family to have caused this suspension.
Is this a squeeze? Kiva asked.
Vanosh blinked. I beg your pardon?
You heard me. Is this a squeeze? Are you hitting us up for a bribe?
A bribe?
Yes.
I'm not sure what part of this discussion suggested to you that I was fishing for a bribe, Lady Kiva.
Ugh, for fuck's sake, don't be coy, Kiva said irritably. Let's pretend we're all adults here, and we don't have to get cute about a business transaction. Tell me what you want.
She jabbed a thumb at Magnute, whose expression suggested he couldn't believe this particular conversation was actually happening, and Magnute here will take care of the rest. Vanosh turned to Magnute. Do you bribe Imperial Customs officers often, Chief Purser Magnute?
Don't answer that, Captain Planica said to Magnute.
Magnute looked visibly relieved to be told to stay quiet. Planica turned to Vanosh.
My apologies, Inspector.
Our owner's representative is understandably frustrated at the moment and chose her words foolishly. I assure you that it is not our policy to attempt to bribe Imperial officials, nor should Lady Kiva's outburst suggest that any of us believe you are bribable. Isn't that correct, Lady Kiva?
Kiva gave her starship captain a long look of, you have to be fucking kidding me, pal. And then, having received an, I am so not fucking kidding you, you asshole, look back from the captain, turned her attention back to Vanosh.
Yes, I made a bad joke. Sorry about that. Perhaps you should stay out of the field of comedy, Lady Kiva, Vanosh said.
That's a hot tip. Thanks for that.
In any event, Lady Kiva, Captain Planica, you appear to be under the impression that I'm the reason your goods are sequestered and your trade privileges suspended.
Aren't you?
Kiva asked. Vanosh smiled, again, thinly, which made Lagos wonder if he could smile any other way. If it were up to me, Lady Kiva, I would have taken the bribe and then threatened to have all three of you arrested and then pocketed the even larger second bribe.
I knew it! Kiva said. You shifty little fucker.
Vanosh nodded his head slightly in acknowledgement. However, in this case, the directive comes from over my head. In point of fact, Lady Kiva, the ban on your haverfruit and any trade your ship and your family might conduct on End comes from the Duke himself. Vanosh handed over another document. This one, a traditional folded letter on heavy parchment, sealed in wax with the ducal signet, which meant the Duke of End was very much not fucking around on this one. You will have to take it up with him,
Vanosh continued. Kiva took it. Well, this is just fucking perfect, isn't it? She said. Indeed, Vanosh said. If I may offer a suggestion, Lady Kiva.
Yes?
The Duke of End owns most of the planet. Maybe don't try to bribe him. Arranging a meeting with the Duke of End took a day. The Port of Endfall wasn't allowing direct shuttle flights from ships. We've had some shot at when they came in for a landing. So Kiva had to shuttle to Imperial Station, the massive space station where the Empire kept the majority of its business, and take the Beanstalk, heavily fortified from insurgent attack, down to port. There, she was met by a local family lackey who welcomed her and led her to her car. What the hell is this? Kiva asked when she saw it. The car was less of a car than a small tank.
In order to reach the Duke's palace, we're going to have to go through some rough neighborhoods, Lady Kiva, the lackey said.
You don't think this looks a little conspicuous? That it doesn't have shoot at me blinking over it in bright lights?
Ma'am, at the moment, pretty much anything that moves is being shot at.
The lackey opened the passenger compartment door. For that matter, anything that stays still for too long is being shot at, too. He motioned her inside. Kiva took the hint. The inside of the passenger compartment of the little tank was reasonably luxurious, at least. Kiva sat down and strapped in and acknowledged the other two people in the compartment with her, executives for the family here on End. One of them extended her hand to Lagos.
Lady Kiva, I'm Iota Finn, your local executive vice president for the House of Lagos.
Kiva shook it, and Finn used her other hand to motion to the third occupant. This is Yonan Rue, head of your legal department here. Rue nodded.
Hi, Kiva said to both. You won't remember, but you and I have met before, Finn said to Kiva. Before I was assigned to End, I worked in your mother's office in Ikoyi. You were a child then, of course.
Right. Well, that's a great story, Finn, but at the moment, you'll forgive me if I don't really give a shit if you met me when I was six. I want to know what the fuck is going on with this ban.
Finn smiled. You're definitely your mother's child, she said. She was also blunt and to the point.
Yes, we're a family of assholes, Kiva said, and the car lurched forward. Now, explain.
Finn nodded to Rue.
We have two problems right now, Lady Kiva, and they're related. The first is the ban. The second is the rebellion.
Kiva furrowed her brow at this. What does the rebellion have to do with us?
Politically, nothing. It's just another rebellion.
Just another? How many rebellions does this goddamn planet have?
One or two a decade, Finn said. The planet's called End for a reason, Lady Kiva. It's the farthest human outpost in the Interdependency, and the most difficult to get to, and the only one where the residents don't have guaranteed travel privileges. It's been the dumping ground for all of the Empire's rebels and dissidents for centuries. They don't all just start playing nice when they get here. As if to accentuate the point, there was a loud thock from one of the side panels.
What was that? Kiva asked the driver.
Exploratory shot, ma'am. Nothing to worry about.
Being shot at is nothing to worry about?
If they'd been serious, they would have hit us with a rocket.
Kiva looked back to Finn. You people do this once a decade?
Once or twice a decade, yes.
You don't have other things to take up your time? Sport teams, board games?
Usually the rebellions are confined to outer provinces, Rue said. They pop up, the reigning duke sends in the home guard, it's over in a couple of months. This one is different.
This one is organized, Finn said. It's got some firepower behind it.
Yeah, I figured that part out on my own, Kiva said. But I'm still not hearing what it has to do with us.
As I said, politically, nothing, Rue continued. But this particular rebellion has been expensive to fight. Tax revenues are dropping because of business disruption. That money's got to come from somewhere.
From us?
From us, Rue agreed.
Not just us, Finn amended. He's putting the squeeze on all guild interests here. Higher taxes and tariffs for a start. The Duke pushed them up to the Imperial legal limit.
But that wasn't enough, Rue said. So at that point, the Duke started getting creative.
When the virus was reported on the grapefruit, the Duke froze the banking accounts of the House of Lagos.
Finn said. Theoretically, they're in escrow pending legal determination of damages to End in the spread of the virus to native crops. How are we responsible for that? Kiva asked.
We might not be, Rue said. That'll need to be decided in court. But if the Duke can prove that the virus was introduced into the End ecosystem due to negligence on our part, he's entitled by Imperial law to compensation and penalties.
And, in the meantime, to keep us from repatriating profits to Ikoyi and potentially out of the reach of the Duke, our accounts are in escrow here, Finn said.
But they're not really in escrow, are they? Kiva said, and pointed out the small, thick, bulletproof window. The Duke is using them to fund the fight against these rebels.
Rue smiled, thinly. Everyone, on End, apparently, smiled that way.
As it happens, when the Duke declared the current state of emergency, he nationalized the banks. The official line is that it's to tamp down on financial panics and speculations, but the executives at the guild banks tell us he's raiding accounts.
Kiva snorted. Well, that's nice. It's not a bad plan, at least as it relates to the House of Lagos, Finn admitted. If he beats the rebellion, he has all the time it will take for the litigation to run to replace the funds he's stolen. That will be years.
And if he loses, then it won't matter anyway, because he'll probably be dead, Rue said.
Kiva grunted at this and looked out the window. End's capital city of Inverness rolled by, run down, unhappy, a few sooty fires in the distance.
Will he?
Will he what? Finn asked.
Will he lose?
Finn and Rue looked at each other.
It wouldn't be the first time a Duke of End has been deposed, Finn said.
Fine, but what about this one? Kiva asked. Are we wasting our fucking time going to talk to this asshole?
It's not looking great for the Duke, no, Rue said after a minute. We've heard rumors of desertions in the provinces, and of military commanders changing sides and taking their soldiers with them. We'll probably know within the next week how things are going to shake out.
Kiva pointed upward. And what about those assholes? The Imperials? The Duke is a goddamn noble, after all. They would probably see it as bad optics to have him dragged out in the street and shot.
This is End, Lady Kiva, Rue said. As long as the interdependency gets its percentage of trade, everything else is an internal matter.
Including the death of a duke? It wouldn't be the first time a Duke of End has been deposed, Finn repeated.
We're about to arrive at the palace, the driver said. It'll take a few minutes to get through the security checkpoints. Ma'am, may I have your invitation to the palace?
Kiva passed it forward and then turned her attention back to her underlings. So basically, what I do now is go in and beg this motherfucker to let me sell my haver fruit. And if he does, expect him to put any profit into this so-called escrow and never see it again.
Not for years, no, Finn said. Best case scenario.
Why the fuck didn't you see this coming?
Lagos asked Finn and jabbed a finger toward the heavily fortified palace, visible through the front windshield.
We're sitting here grabbing our own tits while this asshole is using our cash to play whack-a-mole with insurgents.
As it happens, I did see it coming, Finn said, which is why the accounts that are escrowed were only about half as full as they were the minute the first reports of the virus started coming in.
Where's the rest of the money? Did you bury it in the backyard?
In a manner of speaking. The House of Lagos has become, through a number of intermediaries, owners of quite a lot of property.
Kiva motioned around. Not here, I hope. This fucking town is on fire.
No. Mostly in the provinces of Tomnahirich and Claremont. Particularly Claremont. The local count there was keen on offloading a number of very nice properties. He wanted to achieve liquidity fast.
Of course he did. Nobles don't tend to be popular during revolutions.
No, they don't, Lady Kiva.
The car started moving forward again.
There are two other things you should know going into this meeting with the Duke, Rue said to Kiva.
Tell me.
Rue handed over a sheet. One, we did as you asked and followed up on that virus. There was absolutely no evidence of viral infection on those grapefruit grafts until after they made it to orchards here on End. Nothing in the stock or fruit in the warehouses, and nothing on the samples that were tested on the no-sir before she left.
Kiva took the sheet and looked at it.
So you think it's sabotage?
Pretty sure of that, yes. Whether we can prove that to the satisfaction of a court is another matter. Which brings us to the other thing. The Duke has an advisor from one of the guild houses. You're not going to like which house it is. Kiva looked up. Oh, don't you even fucking say it. It's the House of Nohamapeeton. The name of the ducal castle was Kinmalees. It was overly plush in a manner that suggested that the residents had confused excess for elegance. Kiva, who came from a line of immensely wealthy people who didn't give a shit whether their wealth impressed you or not, immediately felt twitchy within its walls. This place needs a cleansing fucking fire, she thought, as she was led down one interminable hallway after another on her way to the Duke of N's office. One thing, Finn said to Kiva as the page came to retrieve her. The Duke finds profanity a mark of a lesser intellect. Try to avoid it with him if you can. What an asshole, she thought, as she stepped into the Duke's office, as vomitously ornate as any other part of the palace. The family legend had it that Kiva Lagos's very first word as an infant was fuck, a legend that was entirely liable to be true, given the swearing propensity of the Countess Huma Lagos, Kiva's mother and head of the House of Lagos. It would have been more surprising if it wasn't, frankly. Kiva couldn't remember ever not swearing. And of course, as the daughter of Countess Lagos, even as the sixth child with no shot at the title, no one was ever going to tell her to stop. And now this prick, who had a jabong up his ass about it. The prick in question, the one with the rectally stored jabong, was standing at his office bar, a tumbler of some amber liquid in his hand, tall, with a beard that could hide birds in it, laughing. Standing next to him, also with a tumbler, also laughing, and in his family's pretentiously simple black, was none other than Granny Nohamapeeton. The page cleared his throat, and the Duke looked up. The Lady Kiva Lagos, the page said, and departed. My dear Lady Kiva, said the Duke of End, coming away from the bar. Welcome, welcome. Your Grace, Kiva said, and gave a bare nod. As the daughter of a househead and ranking representative of the house on the planet, Lagos could have simply addressed him as Duke and gotten away with it. But she was here to kiss ass, so might as well get to the puckering early. Allow me to introduce my advisor, Lord Grenny of the House of Nohamapeeton.
We've met, Grenny said to the Duke.
Have you now?
We went to school together, Grenny said.
What a small world, remarked the Duke.
Isn't it just? Kiva replied.
Yes. Well, sit down, Lady Kiva, the Duke said, motioning to the left-hand chair in front of his desk. Lagos took it, an overstuffed monstrosity she nearly disappeared into, with Granny taking the chair on the right. The Duke sat down in his own fucking parody of a chair, behind a desk a poor family could make a house out of. I do regret that the circumstances of our meeting could not be better.
I understand, sir. It is challenging when you have insurgents almost knocking on your door.
What? No, the Duke said. And Kiva saw Granny twitch out the very smallest of smiles. No, not that. I meant the difficulty with this virus your house brought to us.
Truly, Kiva said.
Are you sure that we brought it, sir?
What do you mean?
I mean our investigators here did not find it in any of the samples in our warehouse or on the no, sir. It only showed up in the orchards.
This is news to us, Granny said.
Is it? Kiva replied, looking at him directly. Well, if it is, my representatives have made a report. She looked over to the Duke. They've filed it with your secretary's office, along with the notice of an appeal for the lifting of our trade ban.
I don't think lifting that ban would be wise, Granny said.
With all due respect to your representatives and their investigators, Kiva,
Until that study can be thoroughly examined, the Duke, for the safety of the citizens of End, has to assume that any other product you carry is likewise infected.
I'm afraid your friend is correct about that, the Duke said to Kiva. You've heard about how the virus crossed over to our Banu, wiped out the crop in entire areas. We can't risk another event like that. The Banu failure is one of the reasons we have this rebellion in the first place.
I understand your concern, sir, and that is why the House of Lagos is willing to assist you.
The Duke squinted at Kiva. How do you mean?
I understand you have placed our accounts in escrow, pending resolution of a court case regarding the virus. Kiva watched the Duke's eyes flicker, briefly, over to Grenny's before coming back to her own.
So I have. It was the prudent course of action.
Allow me to formally offer those sums to you as a loan from the House of Lagos to assist you in resisting this rebellion. We would be happy to offer you excellent terms.
That's generous of you, the Duke said.
It's business, Kiva replied. It does the House of Lagos no good to have you out of power, sir, and this allows you access to funds that you would not otherwise have at your disposal.
Why should that money sit and do you no good?
Put it to use. I'm afraid it's not that simple, Granny said.
Actually, it is that simple, Kiva retorted. We can write it into the loan that if the House of Lagos is found liable, the loan represents the damages, and that any remainder plus interest on the loan constitutes penalties.
It's not a matter of legalities. It's the matter of perception, Granny said.
The perception of the Duke robustly defending his people looks bad? Worse than the perception of a Duke being overthrown because he's too daintily concerned about looking bad?
Granny turned to the Duke. Sir, it looks like a bribe.
A bribe for what?
Kiva exclaimed. Well, that's the question, isn't it? Granny said.
Lady Kiva, in exchange for this generosity by the House of Lagos, what would you expect? Asked the Duke.
Again, and with respect, sir, it's not generosity. If the suit fails, the House of Lagos would expect to get our loan back. That's business. But you want something else, too, don't you? Granny asked.
Of course I do. I want to be able to sell my god...
Kiva caught herself at the last moment.
Blessed haver fruit, sir.
And when I do, the money we make on the sale and licensing will not go with the yes, sir, when we leave. It'll stay here with you as part of the loan.
Along with any additional viruses your crop might be carrying, Granny said.
Kiva looked over to the Duke. Sir, there are inspectors at Imperial Station. They do random sampling of our cargo anyway. I'm happy to have them do an in-depth inspection of the haver fruit to assure it's clean and poses no threat to the End biome.
The Duke of End at least appeared to think about it, but then he stared over at Granny, who sat impassively, and shook his head. Lady Kiva, you have been kind, both with your offer and your concern. But I don't believe that such measures will be necessary. I believe this rebellion will be contained presently. As such, your offer will be unneeded. As for your haver fruit, until we have time to thoroughly examine your report, I need to err on the side of caution. I'm afraid I'm unable to lift your trade ban until the conclusion of the trial. I know you understand.
You bet your ass I do, Kiva said, and stood.
Excuse me, the Duke said, standing.
Granny stood as well.
Thank you for your time, sir.
Will you call me a page so I can find my way out of this goddamned maze?
Allow me to walk the Lady Kiva out, sir, Granny said to the Duke smoothly.
Yes, of course.
The Duke nodded his goodbye to both of them and headed back over to his bar.
You motherfucker, Kiva said to Granny as soon as they exited his office.
It's nice to see you too, Granny said.
You better hope I don't find you or the House of Nohama Peton is behind this fucking virus, because if I do, I will come all the way back to End to feast on your fucking heart.
You're always welcome to visit me, of course.
So, are you?
Behind the virus?
Yes.
Obviously, I am not. But even if I were, I don't think you're foolish enough to believe I would tell you. You could save me a trip. Now, why would I want to do that?
You haven't changed, Grenny.
And you shouldn't feel too bad, Kiva.
Grenny motioned back toward the Duke's office.
You almost had him with that offer of a loan. That was smart, by the way. As a guild house, any loan you make to a noble in the defense of the imperial system is backed by the Empire itself. A fine way to cover your ass.
Until you screwed me.
I'd think you'd be used to that by now.
Kiva snorted at this. Don't think I didn't notice that, Grenny. We went to school together, my ass.
It was much more politic than how you would have put it. I fucked his brains out whenever he went to visit his sister in her dormitory at university.
I wouldn't have said it like that, Kiva said. I was told not to swear. How is your asshole sister, anyway?
Not happy. She was going to be crown princess of the Empire, but then Renared Wu lost his head in a racing accident. A real tragedy for her. She thinks so. It was bad for Renared as well, of course. I understand the Emperor's bastard daughter is now the heir. So my brother will take a run at her, I imagine.
There's the Nohamapeaton family I remember. Full of romantics.
You didn't complain once.
Kiva stopped and looked at Grenny, who also stopped. Well, once I was a fucking idiot. Now I'm not.
That would be a first for Alagos, then, Grenny said.
What scam do you have running on this dipshit duke?
One, his name is Ferd, and not dipshit. Two, I'm offended you think I'm running a scam on him.
You got him to shake off a multi-million mark bribe.
See? I told you it was a bribe. I was right.
No one passes up that much unless they've got something better on offer.
I can't possibly speak to that, Kiva. Certainly not to you.
Come on, Grenny. This isn't about the virus. And we're on fucking end. It's going to take me 9 months to get back to Hub, and another 3 from there to Ikoyi. Anything you tell me now is going to be dead news then.
Grenny looked around and then started walking again.
Kiva caught up. Tell me. Tell me what you have planned for End.
Your first error, Kiva, is assuming that anything I'm doing here has to do with just this planet.
I don't follow.
I know you don't. I didn't intend for you to.
Grenny stopped again and then pointed. Take this hole, then the second left, and then the first right after that. You'll be back to the same lobby you came in from.
Kiva nodded. You were never one to go all the way to the end of things, were you, Grenny? You might be surprised.
He leaned in and gave Kiva a peck on the cheek.
Goodbye, my dear Kiva. I wasn't ever expecting to see you again, you know. No one important really ever comes to End. And I don't expect to see you again after this. But I am fond of you, in spite of everything. So I'm glad we got a moment for this.
Whatever this is. Grenny smiled.
You'll have a name for it soon, he said, and walked off.
Hit me with it, Kiva said, back on Yes, Sir, with Captain Blanika and Gazan Magnute.
We were supposed to take receipt of roughly 60 million marks worth of licensing fees and royalties here on End, Magnute said. We're going to come away with zero, all in escrow, and we probably won't get it back. We estimated that the Haverfruit would generate 20 million marks for the product on hand and another 10 million marks in initial license fees and stock sales. We're coming away with another zero for that. We have another roughly 10 million marks in miscellaneous cargo picked up at other stops that we're not being allowed to unload and sell. So zero for that, too. There's about a million marks worth of cargo being sent to End that we're acting as shipping for, and that was allowed to be unloaded, but has been placed in quarantine for several weeks in a hold open to the vacuum of space. We'll be gone when the delivery happens, and the fees will be held for the next Lagos ship to arrive, which is the I Think We're Alone Now, which will be along in 20 standard months. So, 100 million mark loss, Kiva said. We netted 40 million marks on the last 3 stops, so it's a net 60 million mark loss, more or less. And this is the last stop on the itinerary. Then back to Hub to transfer to Ikoyi. Lagos nodded. Using the flow, there were several ways to get to End, but only one way to get back.
the flow stream from End to Hub. Sooner or later, all streams flowed into Hub. But what that meant was there was no other chance to recoup losses between End and Hub. "I'm open to ideas here," Kiva said. "Tomi?"
"The whole point was to introduce Haverfruit to End," the captain said. "Everyone else in the interdependency is already full up on it.
We can harvest what we have. We're going to have to at this point. Vacuum flash out the water and sell the concentrate at Hub. But your family already has licensees there. They could complain to the Imperial Trade Commission if we came in and undersold them."
"The captain's right," Magnoot said. "And even if we matched prices, we'd create a glut. We'd pick up a few million marks at most and piss off the licensees the House of Lagos needs for long-term profits.
So, what we're saying is, we're fucked." "That would be the gist of it. Yes, ma'am." Kiva put her head in her hands for a couple of moments, then looked over to Blanika. "When do we leave End?"
"We have some ship maintenance we're taking care of while we're here at Imperial Station, and Gazin here is taking on some additional crew to make up for the ones we lost at Lankaran. We're here for another week."
"Can we stretch that?"
"Not really," Blanika said. "Our current dock is claimed 9 days from now. Imperial Station needs a full day for cargo clearance and reset. We have 7 days, and then we have to move."
"Then 7 days it is."
7 days for what?" Magnoot asked.
"For a fucking miracle to happen and save our asses," Kiva said. "That's not too much to ask for, is it?" Chapter 3. Technically speaking, upon the moment of the death of Emperor Ottavio IV, Cardinia became the new emperor. Realistically speaking, nothing is ever that simple. "You are going to have to officially declare a period of mourning," Nafa Dolg said to her in what had suddenly and officially become her office. It was now only moments after her father had died. His body was currently being removed from his bedroom, her bedroom, via a litter that had borne the bodies of nearly all the emperors who had been lucky enough to actually die at home. Cardinia had seen the litter, stored away in one of the other rooms in the private apartment, and thought it a ghastly bit of business, and realized that, one day, it was very likely her bones would be carted out on it, too. Tradition had its downsides. Cardinia laughed to herself.
"Car?"
Nafa said. "I'm having morbid thoughts," Cardinia said. "I can give you a couple of minutes for yourself, but only a couple."
"The transition of emperors is a busy time," Nafa said, as gently as possible.
"How long is the official mourning period supposed to be?"
"It's traditionally 5 standard days.
Cardinia nodded. "The rest of the interdependency gets 5 days. I get 5 minutes.
"I'm going to come back," Nafa said, getting up.
"No," Cardinia shook her head. "Keep me busy, Naf."
Nafa kept her busy.
First, the official declaration of mourning. Cardinia went down the hall to the office of Geld Deng, her father's, and now, unless she chose otherwise, her personal secretary, who would transmit the order. Cardinia was worried that she would have to dictate something that sounded official, but Deng had the declaration already ready for her, which shouldn't have surprised her. Many emperors had come and gone during the time of the interdependency. Cardinia read over the declaration, its contents hallowed by time and consecrated by tradition, found the language ossified and musty, but was in no condition mentally to revise. So she nodded her assent, took a pen to sign, and then hesitated.
"What is it, Your Majesty?" Deng said, and some part of Cardinia's brain noted that this was the first time anyone had called her that officially.
"I don't know how to sign this," Cardinia said. "I haven't chosen my official name yet."
"If you prefer, you may simply sign it with the Imperial Seal for now."
"Yes, thank you." Deng got out wax and seal, melted the wax, and gave the seal to Cardinia to press. She did, the seal lifting off the Imperial green wax, revealing the crest of the Wu family with the Imperial crown above it. Her crown.
Cardinia handed the seal back to Deng and noticed he was crying.
"This makes it official," he said to her. "You are the Emperor now, Your Majesty."
"How long did you serve my father?" Cardinia asked.
39 years, Deng said, and looked about to break down.
Impulsively, Cardinia reached over and hugged him, and after a moment broke the hug.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I shouldn't have done that." "You're the Emperor, ma'am," Deng said. "You can do anything you want."
"Keep me from inappropriate familiarity from now on, please," Cardinia said to Nafa after they left the secretary's office.
"I thought it was sweet," Nafa said. "That poor old man, he's had a rough day."
"His boss died."
"Yes, but he also assumes he lost his job."
"Normally, by this time, the new Emperor's set of cronies are busy installing themselves into positions of power. His is a position of power, nominally."
"I don't have any cronies," Cardinia said.
"I mean, besides you."
"Don't worry, you'll have volunteers."
"What do I have next?"
"You're meeting with the executive committee in half an hour."
Cardinia frowned at this. "We can't get to Xi'an that quickly. The executive committee, as with nearly all of the imperial apparatus of state, did its work in the immense space station above Hub." Nafa arched her eyebrow at this. "You don't have to go anywhere," she said. "You are Emperor now. They come to you."
"Dr. Drinnen informed them several hours ago that your father was fading. The committee had hoped to be present to comfort you when he passed." "Those are their words, by the way."
Cardinia thought of the 9 members of the executive committee hovering over her father's deathbed, robbing the two of them of their final, as intimate as possible under the circumstances, moments together, and suppressed an itchy feeling.
"I'll have to remember to thank them."
Nafa's eyebrow arched again, but she said nothing.
"They're in the formal ballroom at the moment. That's on the other side of the building."
"Thank you."
"Of course. What would you like to do now?"
"I think I want to pee." Nafa nodded and walked Cardinia to her suite of rooms. "I'll be back in 15 minutes, she said to her boss. "What will you do with your free time?" "Same thing as you, in a slightly less luxurious commode." Cardinia smiled at this, and Nafa walked off. Inside her rooms, part of Cardinia's brain noted everything she was doing as a first.
"This is the first time in this room as Emperor," it said. "This is the first time picking up a tablet as Emperor. This is the first time in this bathroom as Emperor. This is the first time I've unzipped my pants as Emperor. First time sitting on the toilet as Emperor. And now this is my first pee as Emperor." So many firsts.
"Tell me about Emperor Greyland," Cardinia said to her tablet as she sat on the toilet.
"Emperor Greyland reigned from 220 to 223 FI, her tablet said in a pleasant voice, popping up a search page.
The interdependency started its calendar from the founding of the empire by Prophet Emperor Raikela I, which was arrogant. There had already been a perfectly good calendar system in use, in which the founding of the interdependency took place in the late 26th century, but Cardinia suspected it was no less arrogant than what any empire did, given the chance.
Notable events in her reign include the founding of Lamphun, the disappearance of Dala Sisla, and the Emperor's assassination by Gunnar Olafsson in 223.
Why was she assassinated?
At his trial, Gunnar Olafsson maintained the Emperor did not do enough to rescue the citizens of Dala Sisla.
Was this true?
I am a search function. I do not have opinions on political matters.
Cardinia crossed her eyes in irritation.
Fair point, faceless computer, she thought.
How was Dala Sisla lost?
The flow stream access to it disappeared in 222, the tablet said.
Oh, right, Cardinia thought. Her elementary school interdependency history lessons came back to her now.
Dalasisla was one of several early settlements that had met with a bad end before the Wu emperors and the religious and social tenets of interdependence had entirely locked down most opposition. Most of those settlements, however, had been lost to war or famine or disease. Dalasisla was lost because suddenly there was no way to get to it or from it through the flow. It had just disappeared, off the map entirely. Cardenia called up an encyclopedia article on the assassination, complete with a photo of Olafsson, a ship engineer from Dalasisla who had been stationed on the Tun San Din, the imperial tenor. He had assassinated the Emperor Greyland, along with more than 100 of her retinue, by sealing off the ring segment her staterooms were in. And, while the Tun San Din was in the flow, returning from a state visit from Genduba, jettisoning the ring segment out of the time-space bubble surrounding the ship into the flow itself, where it promptly stopped existing. "Well, this is cheerful," Cardenia said to herself. She was not entirely sure why her father had suggested the name Greyland to her, unless he was confident she would be assassinated by a disgruntled minion. This discomfited her somewhat. She skimmed through the rest of the entry and noted that Greyland had apparently actually ordered the evacuation of Dalasisla, based on data provided to her by scientists, but that the evacuation had been opposed in Parliament, including by Dalasisla's own ministers, and by the guilds, which delayed an evacuation until it was too late. Olafsson blamed the Emperor for the delay when the blame should have properly set elsewhere. But there is only one Emperor, Cardenia thought, and she was on his ship.
"Hey," Nafa said from the other room, "are you about done?"
"Almost," Cardenia said. She finished her business, washed up, and walked out of her bathroom to see Nafa holding up a very serious uniform, tailored to Cardenia's measurements.
"What is that?" Cardenia asked.
"You're about to meet the 9 most powerful humans in the universe, not counting yourself," Nafa said. "You might want to dress up a bit." The very serious uniform chafed, but not nearly as much as the executive committee. As Cardenia entered the cavernous ballroom, the 9 members of the committee approached her and bowed deeply.
"Your Majesty," said Gunda Corbine, Archbishop of Xian and nominal head of the executive committee, from the depth of the bow. "Our deepest sorrow and sympathy this day on the passing of your father, the Emperor. He will undoubtedly be seated with the Prophet in the beyond."
Cardenia, who knew of the Emperor's utter lack of religiosity, despite being the official head of the Church of the Interdependency, suppressed the smallest of wry smiles.
"Thank you, Your Eminence. I speak for the entire Council when I say to you that we pledge our unending allegiance to you, the Imperial House of Wu, and the Interdependency."
"Sure, and we thank you," Cardenia said, using, for the first time, the Imperial We and the somewhat more formal Imperial style of address she'd been coached in over the last year. "That's going to take some getting used to," she thought. She glanced over at Nafa, who offered no arched brow at the switch. She would, no doubt, offer it later. The committee remained in a deep bow, which confused Cardenia until she realized they were waiting on her to release them. "Please," she said, only a little flustered, motioning for them to rise. They rose. Cardenia motioned to the long table that had been set in the center of the ballroom. "Let us sit and proceed with business." The committee sat, senior-most, closest to the Emperor's chair at the head of the table, with the exception of Archbishop Corbine, who sat opposite of Cardenia. Cardenia noted the dress of each, the church bishops in fine red robes lined in purple, the guild representatives in their formal black and gold, the parliamentarians in somber blue business suits. Her own very serious uniform was imperial green, dark with emerald piping. "We look like a box of crayons," Cardenia thought.
"You're smiling, Your Majesty," Archbishop Corbine said as she sat.
"We were remembering our father, who often spoke of meeting with this committee."
He spoke well of us, I hope.
No, not really.
Yes, of course. Your Majesty, the next few days are critical. You must set forth a period of mourning.
We have already done so, Your Eminence. We shall observe the traditional 5 days.
Very good,
Corbyn said, giving no sign of fluster at being interrupted.
During that time, you yourself will, unfortunately, be quite busy.
She nodded to Bishop Vere of Hub, sitting to Cardinia's right, who produced a leather folder, and from it a thick sheaf of papers, and offered them to Cardinia.
We have produced a proposed schedule for you, to assist you. It includes a number of briefings, plus formal and informal meetings with the guilds, Parliament, and the Church.
Cardinia took the papers, but did not look at them, handing them over to Nafa, standing behind her chair. We thank you.
We wish to assure you that during this time of transition, everything will be handled smoothly and with the utmost care and respect. We know this is a difficult time for you, and much of this is new. We want to be able to help you transition smoothly into your new role, Your Majesty.
You want to help me transition, or to manage me?
Once more, we thank you, Archbishop.
We are warmed by your concern and solicitousness. We have other concerns as well, said Len Edmunk, one of the guild representatives. The House of Edmunk held the commercial monopolies on cows and pigs and all products deriving thereof, from milk to pig leather. Your father left unresolved a number of issues with the guilds, including monopoly transfers and trade route clearances. Cardinia noted Archbishop Corbyn pursing her lips. Clearly, Edmunk was speaking out of turn.
We have been led to understand that these matters must be sent through Parliament, then for us to give our assent or refusal.
Your father gave assurances these matters would be dealt with, Your Majesty.
Would this be in a way that circumvents the privileges of Parliament, Lord Edmunk?
Of course not, ma'am, Edmunk said after a moment.
We are glad to hear that. One of the things we would like not to do at this early juncture is to give the Parliament the opinion that their role is merely an advisory one, subject to the whims of the Emperor. She turned to Upeksha Ranatunga, the ranking parliamentarian on the committee, seated to her left, who nodded her thanks.
Our father believed in the balance of power that has allowed the interdependency to thrive. The Parliament for the laws and justice. The guilds for trade and prosperity. The Church for spirituality and community. And above them, the Emperor, mother of all, for order.
With that said, ma'am, do not forget that the House of Wu also has a guild, Cardinia said, interrupting Edmunk, who was clearly put out by this point. We would not thereby discount the interests of the guilds. We are also mother of the Church and a simple member of Parliament. We have interest in all. To be fair to all, we shall address guild matters in their time, Lord Edmunk. But we are not our father. His assurances to you are not unheard, but neither am I bound to them. I am Emperor now, not my father.
There, Cardinia thought, and stared levelly at Edmunk. Suck on that for a while.
Edmunk dropped his head in a bow.
Ma'am, he said.
With regard to Parliament, ma'am, there is another serious issue, Ranatunga said. Word has come to us that the rebellion on End has moved to a new and more dangerous phase. The Duke of End has sent assurances that everything is under control, but the assessment of the Imperial Marines commander stationed there is rather less optimistic. He expects the Duke to fall within 2 standard years. Of course, this note was sent 9 months ago. Who knows what the situation there is now?
Have our Marines intervened?
It was your father's policy, and the policy of the several emperors before him, to let End handle End. The Marines are mostly there to keep anyone from leaving the planet without permission.
The commander tells us the only watch they have set from the Emperor, the previous Emperor, was to monitor the safety of the Count of Clermont.
Who is that?
I remember him, ma'am, Corbin said. A minor noble from Sofala, whom your father enlarged. A friend of your father's from university. A physicist who studied the flow.
Why did our father exile him?
Your father offered the title to him just prior to his marriage to the Lady Glenna.
Well, that was an unsubtle hint, Cardenia thought.
The Archbishop was all but implying that her dad and this count were an item prior to Batrin's marriage, which was very much one of those dynastical marriages, the House of Kostiu heading one of the most powerful guilds. The idea was mildly surprising to Cardenia, since, in all the time she knew her father, he never came across as anything other than blandly heterosexual.
But there was a time and place for everything, and it was called university. And, in any event, this count wouldn't be the first inconvenient lover an Emperor shunted out of the picture with a title upgrade somewhere very far away. It would also explain the Marine Watch.
Cardenia nodded her understanding. For now, we will continue our father's posture, but we will want a full briefing.
It's one of the briefings listed on your proposed schedule, Corbin said. And, while we are at least tangentially on the subject of marriage, you are going to bring up Amit Nohama Peton, aren't you?
Cardenia said, in a somewhat less formal tone than she'd previously been managing.
The Nohamapetans are being insistent, Corbin said, almost apologetically.
We are not our brother. We made no assurances to marry a Nohamapetan.
With respect, ma'am, the House of Nohamapetan believes the assurance was not between your brother and Lady Nadashe. It was between the House of Wu and the House of Nohamapetan, and precedent suggests their argument has validity. In 512, Crown Princess Davina was engaged to a member of the House of Edmonk and died before the wedding. Her brother, who would become Chongling I, married a cousin of the original betrothed on the reasoning that the arrangement had already been set into motion.
Cardenia turned to Nafa. How did Crown Princess Davina die?
Suicide, Your Majesty, Nafa said.
Cardenia knew that she would know off the top of her head, or would look it up instantly. Out of an airlock at Xi'an, her suicide note suggests she did not believe the betrothal to be in her best interests. Cardenia turned to Len Edmonk.
We hope you do not believe this sets you in any negative light, Lord Edmonk.
Thank you, ma'am.
Ma'am, may I also suggest to you that you at least consider Amit Nohamapetan's suit, Corbin persisted. Aside from any theoretical agreement between your houses, the House of Nohamapetan is a power among the guilds.
Corbin glanced over at Edmonk, who, as he was looking at the Emperor, was unaware.
Many potential problems and issues with the guilds could be dealt with expeditiously with this alliance.
Cardenia smiled grimly at this. And there are no houses who object to this pairing?
No, ma'am, Edmonk said.
Well, Cardenia said, impressed. This is a rare show of unanimity among the guilds. Almost unprecedented in a millennium.
I believe everyone agrees it is in the interest of the interdependency to have any questions of succession settled sooner than later, Corbin said.
This rankled Cardenia.
We are pleased, Archbishop, that this committee appears unanimous that the most important part of us is our uterus.
Corbin had the good grace to blush at this.
Apologies, Your Majesty. Nothing could be further from the truth. But surely the Emperor must be aware that should something happen to you, there will be contesting claims to the throne within the House of Wu from your many cousins. Many of them were less than pleased when you were, rightfully, put into the line of succession behind your brother. a clear line of succession staves off any questions.
Staves off a civil war, Ranatunga said.
Do we agree that it seems unlikely that we will be dead prior to our coronation? Cardinia asked the committee.
That seems reasonable, ma'am, Corbine said, smiling.
Then may we suggest that we table it until after then?
If you like, Cardinia nodded to Corbine.
You may give the House of Nohamapitan excellent seats to the coronation, and we will speak to Amit Nohamapitan afterwards.
Yes, ma'am.
Emphasis on speak.
We hope we are understood on this matter, and not otherwise represented to Lord Nohamapitan.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. Then is there anything else?
One small thing, Corbine said.
Cardinia waited.
We need to know your imperial name.
We are Greyland, Cardinia said after a pause. Greyland the Second.
I hate the imperial we, Cardinia confessed to Nafa. After the meeting with the executive committee, the two of them had lifted to Xi'an, the heart of the interdependency, in order for Cardinia, now Greyland the Second, to begin the formal transfer of authority from her late father to her. Upon arrival, Greyland the Second was immediately surrounded by advisors, courtiers, flatterers, and assistants, all with their own agendas and plans. Cardinia was tired of it in the first hour, and there was all the rest of her life yet to go.
What bothers you about it? Nafa asked.
It's so pretentious.
You are the Emperor, Nafa pointed out. You are literally the only person in the universe who may use it without pretension.
You know what I mean.
I do. I just think you're wrong.
You think I should use it all the time, then?
I didn't say that, Nafa said.
But you have to admit, it's a pretty fantastic power move.
Oh, you have an opinion? Well, screw you, because my vote counts as two.
Cardinia smiled at this. The two of them were alone, finally, in the cavernous private apartments of the Imperial Palace of Xi'an. All the assistants and courtiers and advisors had been shoved out the door by Nafa. There was only one more thing Cardinia had to do with her day, and it lay behind a door here in the private apartments, a door that could be opened and entered only by the Emperor.
Or so Cardinia explained to Nafa, who frowned.
Only the Emperor.
Yes. What happens if anyone else enters? Are there dogs, lasers that will burn you to ash?
I don't think so.
Can your servants go in there? Or technicians? Are you, as Emperor, responsible for tidying up? Is there a small vacuum cleaner in there? Are you made to dust the place?
I don't think you're taking this very seriously, Cardinia said.
I take it seriously, Nafa promised. I'm just skeptical of how it's being presented.
They both looked at the door.
Well, Nafa said, you might as well get it over with.
Where are you going to be?
I can stay here if you like and wait for you to be done.
Cardinia shook her head.
I don't know how long this will take.
Then I'll be in my quarters, the ones across the palace. You know, where the palace majordomo has exiled me.
We'll get those changed.
No, don't, Nafa said. You need your time away from everyone, including me. She got up.
We're still in the same house. I'm just 16 wings away, is all.
I don't think the palace has 16 wings. It has 24 major sections to it.
Well, you would know.
Yes, I would, Nafa said. And soon, so will you.
She bowed.
Good night, Your Majesty.
She left, smiling. Cardinia watched her go, and then turned her attention to the door. The door was ornate, like everything in the palace, and Cardinia realized that ornate was a design motif she was probably stuck with now. She couldn't just burn everything down and start with clean lines and spaces, tempting as it might be. She was Emperor, but even they had their limits. The door had no knob or access panel or anything else that suggested that it could be opened. Cardenia, sheepishly, put her hand on it to feel for a secret button. The door slid open. "Key to my fingerprints?" Cardenia wondered, and then walked through. The door slid closed behind her. The room